Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Eric, the AEW Women's title headlines AEW Dynamite heading into Christmas weekend. And they had the crowd on their side. The crowd was on the side of a lot of wrestlers on the show. Ricky Starks, Jon Moxley, others will get into that. But this was a match that earned the reaction it got as the match progressed. What did you think of Jamie Hayter retaining her title on her first defense against Hikaru Shida?
Well, I think it made sense for Hayter to retain her title. You don't want to job her out on her first title defense. I found it interesting that they put this in the main event slot. It was one of only three matches pushed, and FTR and the Guns didn't feel like a main event. You could have main evented with the six-man series, match five. They didn't do that. So I guess, I mean, if I'm recalling this correctly, I think Ricky Starks and MJF might have even dipped a little bit for quarter eight last week. Was that last week? Yeah, it was last week. And so my calculation is Tony Khan, it's a holiday week show, probably lots of people running around getting their last minute shopping done and baking and starting to focus on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and the holidays. And he probably figured, why not? I'll give the women a shot. I'll get woke points on Twitter from the people who think he doesn't push the women's division enough. It's a title match, so it's a natural main event. And if the ratings drop in quarter eight, well, that fairly consistently happens no matter what we do. Even a men's world title match, you know, had a bit of a dip. So here we are. Did you like the match? I thought it was a pretty good American women's wrestling match.
Yes, that sounds like a backhanded compliment. But yes, it was a good match. And I thought that the action as the match progressed earned the crowd reaction they got. And there was no guarantee the crowd was going to be super into this, even though they've been into Jamie Hayter lately. And even though Hikaru Shida is really talented, you know, it's not a slot that the AEW women get a lot. There is a backstory to this and the women's division and what's going on. Shida is a bit of a legacy star, such as can be achieved in 3 years and in a company as young as AEW in terms of her performances, especially during the COVID era at Daly's Place and her title reign then. And Hayter is just, you know, fans are into her. And so I think the timing was right to put a women's title match in the main event spot. They had two commercial breaks in this one. They went 16 minutes. You know, I mean, it was a match of the year, but I mean, it was entertaining, and the Britt Baker attempt to interfere with the candlestick and it backfiring, and then Hayter still getting a relatively, would you call it a clean win, even with the shenanigans and the Hayter distraction or the Rebel distraction or not?
Yeah, I would call it a clean win. They had some nice near falls at the end, and the crowd was really into them, the kicking out at, you know, 2.8, 2.9. And then Hayter finally just cut her off with the ripcord lariat for the win. And then angle alert in the post-match, like a double layered angle. If, you know, they're building to that January 11th tag team match with Britt and Hayter versus Saraya. And partner to be named, and you know, there's internet hope is that it'll be Sasha Banks, Mercedes Vernado, but who knows? I mean, they have ways to go. They could make Shida the partner. They could make Toni Storm the partner, right? Coming off of that tonight's match and post match angle.
Yeah. I thought at the end it was a showcase of some of the top women in AEW and showed off the star power and really who the focus right now is of that women's division. And, you know, Saraya wasn't asked to do a lot, which might be good because, you know, it's been a little rocky for her. But putting her in a position to just run out and do the right thing under those circumstances is it's a good thing. So, anyway, well, let's introduce ourselves and move on to talk about other aspects of the show. And that includes inviting people to call and email as we progress here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, and the host of various podcasts throughout the week, including Everything with Rich and Wade and The Fix with Todd Martin, a couple signature VIP shows, our post-pay-per-view roundtables, Wade Keller Hotlines, and more, and our free shows, which are ad-free for our members, our VIP members, like the Wade Keller Podcast and Wade Keller Post Shows. Tomorrow, Zach Haynorn will join me for our Thursday flagship edition. So if you have questions on AEW or anything going on in pro wrestling, email us now, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, and we'll try to get to your questions on our flagship tomorrow afternoon, Thursday afternoon. In the meantime, though, if you're live streaming the show, you can email us or call us about tonight's Dynamite and discuss the show with my co-host this week, former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist and frequent contributor to PW Torch, including on podcasts, Eric Kroll. Eric, welcome back to the co-host seat.
Thank you for the nice intro, Wade. The Fix is your must-listen Go VIP show, one of the top selling points of VIP, in addition to the newsletter. And it's the show where I think I'm going to start a drinking game for every time Todd gently scolds you and says, "Wade, Wade," in that way that he does. Yeah, I'll have to take a drink. I think last week it might have been one or two, so a little more limited last week.
Yes, we have a good time. It's fun. So yeah, go VIP, check it out. Let's get about the phone number. Yeah, if you want to be part of tonight's show, consider yourself formally invited. Our number, if you want to participate, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. We're very light on callers this week. I think you hit – I don't know what it means about ratings, Eric, but I think a lot of people are out doing what I was doing yesterday, which is panic shopping. I kept hearing for days, get your last minute Christmas shopping done. And I'm like, I haven't even started yet. I am going to be I'm interested in what the viewership numbers will be and if they can hold on. Although last night's NXT did a nice number. I was kind of, I don't say half joking, but like more saying it for effect that before a little bit of a comeback rating for Dynamite last week, that NXT was encroaching and making it sort of competitive in the Tuesday versus Wednesday battle. NXT last night doing 705,000 viewers, one of their better numbers in a while, after dropping to 534 a couple of weeks before that. A little bit of momentum with NXT coming out of their, I was going to say their takeover special, but their PLE special on Peacock. And New Day, you know, being part of the show and that kind of thing. I seriously doubt AEW is going to take a much of a hit in viewership compared to what like the 6 week average is. But they might be below last week's number, and it might be one of the closest weeks between NXT and AEW in a while. I anticipate those numbers. But my point in saying that is we have fewer calls than usual. So give us a call or push 1 if you have already called us, if you want to be on the show. That phone number to call is 347-215-8558 and push 1. The other option that works very well is emailing the show. If you want to be part of it, that means you don't necessarily have to listen live if it doesn't work for your schedule. But as you're watching Dynamite, you can email us and let us know your thoughts or send a question. The email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so we got a lot more to cover on the show that I want to bring up with you, Eric, and we got some emails, and hopefully we'll get plenty of calls. But Javier Machado has asked to go first. He's got an early morning tomorrow, so we're going to open up with the Javier segment, which includes, Eric, as you know, the Javier jingle. PW Torch contributor Javier, I'm glad I saw your note in the email letting you know you wanted to come on sooner, not later, as usual. How you doing?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Eric. How's it going? Yeah, I got an early morning tomorrow, so got to get going. And I promise not to be my usual long-winded self. I promise not to be my usual long-winded self either. So
Why not, Javier? You clouded your way to the front of the line, front of the calling line, and you got your own theme song. Why not complete the hat trick here?
I do have a New Japan question for you, but I'll save that for last, Eric. I thought this was a good show, and I loved the opening segment with Ricky Starks for several reasons. Number one, it was my concern that he'd probably be, you know, despite the groundswell that he got while he was feuding with MJF and following up on that, you know, that promo that they weren't going to immediately follow up, that they were going to put him in the back burner, that they wouldn't have him immediately something ready for him to go on next. I'm really glad that he opened up the show and got started referencing his match with MJF instead of just forgetting about it and moving on, kind of like what they did with Moxley. You know, that he referenced that, then Jericho coming out. I do have to hand it to Jericho that he will always show up with whoever's getting hot at the time. you know, he does give them stuff, so I can't be too angry at that, but I just, you know, and Ricky Starks even kind of mentioned that, kind of like, you know, obliquely mentioned that, you know, he's always around, you know, involved around whoever's hot at the time to try to get a bit of a rub off of them. I really enjoyed that. I think that, you know, going toe-to-toe on the mic with Jericho is sometimes be dangerous, but I think Ricky Starks looked really good and that he really fit in. The other thing that I really appreciated was Jericho cutting his, you know, his part of it on the ramp, because psychologically you had Ricky Starks holding the ring, which is, you know, where the center of attention for wrestling is, and he was the one holding the ring while Jericho was on the outside until, you know, it was safe to come in. So, you know, giving, seeding the ground to Ricky Starks makes Ricky Starks look even more important. So I thought that first segment was probably one of my favorite, you know, like talking segments in AEW in quite a while.
I'm with you, Javier. I really liked that Ricky Starks opened the show. And it was so important to send the message to viewers. I mean, it's important for the company because Ricky Starks is talented. He's been underutilized, I would argue, for a few years here. And fans are behind him. And you don't want fans to be behind a wrestler who then gets sent to the bench and not heard from for a while, or only on Rampage, or only on Dark, or only on Dynamite in a few weeks, and they just don't even bring up MJF. He had momentum coming out of the last couple of weeks in his promo work and match with MJF. So get him out there in something else. Jericho is a really good follow-up to MJF. I was happy to see it. And, you know, I don't know what percentage of time they open a show with a talking segment, but if you are going to open the show talking, that's a prestigious spot to be in, especially on Dynamite, where they don't do that a lot. It might be Danielson. It might have been Punk. It might be Moxley. They're not going to, you know, they don't open with a lot of people talking. They trusted Starks. Now, of course, that included Jericho too, but not right away. So, for a number of reasons, I thought that this helped frame and define Ricky Starks in a way that validated and amplified, I think, how fans are willing to look at him. But it takes both things to happen, to create a star and elevate a star. And one thing AEW I don't think has specialized in is taking a wrestler who's popular and amplifying it when the time is right and raising that wrestler up to another level and sustaining it. They kind of go with however popular a team is or a wrestler is or a faction is, and they just go forward with that. This was, I think, a deliberate and well-timed effort to amplify or at least continue on with the momentum Starks had. And Starks, I thought, was good in the ring. I think there was one thing he said. I can remember what it was, where I was like, I don't know if I'd have said that. But the back and forth with Starks and Jericho was good. And the thing that jumped out to me is, and this is so important, is Ricky Starks has not shrunk in the moment against MJF or against Jericho. He stood there and he carried himself like he makes twice as much money as Jericho and is going to have big of a career or bigger than Jericho when all is said and done. And having that self-confidence and projecting that the way that he did tonight validates the complaints and the frustration that people who believed Ricky Starks had this in him have felt the last couple of years. Eric, your thoughts?
Well, it was good that they recapped last week's main event to open the show, right? And the post-match segue to Bryan Danielson, because it reminded the viewers that
I was
last
so
week,
bored. We saw it last week.
That last week was boring. that last week was important. What was important last week? It popped Wade Keller, who wants nothing but video packages for his entire 2 hours of the show. That would be his platonic.
I'll get that on Monday on Raw. Monday on Raw. The best
or the next pay-per-view, yeah. But, you know, it was a good promo that established, you know, Starks took responsibility for his loss, you know, took said he was moving on, and you could see all of the beats that were going to come, right? He was going to the heels were going to recruit him. He was going to tell him to F off. Then they were going to beat him down. And I literally wrote in my notebook, I really hope Action Andretti makes the save here. And yep, he absolutely did, came out to make the save. Yep. They followed up on the other big thing that happened last week, which as much as I usually like Dynamite, even I will admit that following up, not historically AEW's strong suit over the last 3 years. You know, Sammy took a nice spin bump for Action Andretti. And even though it was felt like a very WWE Raw start to the show, it was simple, it was effective, it worked. Wade, I wrote down the question. Starks called Jericho the Clout Vampire a couple times during the show, during this promo. And I would have killed in the mid to late 80s if somebody on World Championship Wrestling on Saturday night would have come out and called Dusty Rhodes the Clout Vampire, because that's all he did. He failed to get over. Did you on the Wade scale, is the Clout Vampire too inside? Is it too forceful?
No.
All right.
No, because I think the effect, it feels like an insult to somebody who props himself up as having a big ego, and it reflects what Jericho's public life is. It's not private. You can look at that and go, yeah, the guy on the podcast, the guy on the TV show, you know, the guy in public life, that fits. What do you think, Javier, about that?
Well, yeah, and it also fits the story, because it's not only, you know, it's like, let's say you know nothing about his public life, it still fits the story because he is trying to recruit somebody who's obviously been hot recently. So, you know, and he did the same thing when Daniel Garcia started getting hot. He tried to recruit him. Or, you know, successfully recruited him. So that's, you know, it fits that he's trying to surround himself with people who are on the come up, so they make him look better. You know, which it's also true. And it's funny you brought up the Dusty Rhodes. The thing is that, you know, Jericho's still giving back to these people, but it's kind of like I like seeing it from like the outside point of view, because it's kind of, you know, you could tell the give and take situation where he is giving stuff to Andretti by, you know, losing to him, and, you know, and like I said, you know, I mean, Jericho could have been doing the same thing that he did face to face with Ricky Starks in the ring. He did not. He stayed on the stage. So, you know, and you still could have had the attack from behind, but, you know, they didn't. That is like a psychological thing, you know, that he, to help Ricky Starks get it more over. So Jericho is still getting something out of it, so he can still stay relevant. But at the same time, he's giving back. You know, at some point, that's going to flip, but we're not there yet.
Very good. Anything else you want to say about Starks, Jericho, and that whole segment, Javier?
No, for well, I mean, and I also had Eric already brought up Andretti. I did like the Andretti follow up, because I too was worried that, you know, Andretti would get this moment and then like back to dark to him. But you know, the fact that he made the save, that was I was also pleasantly surprised with that.
What'd you think of his promo later in the show?
I thought it was okay. I don't think it was like, you know, knocked it out of the park, better than a lot of the, you know, newer people who come in, like, you know, like Wheeler Yuta, you know, better than Wheeler Yuta, better than like a Ricochet promo, you know, so I thought he was okay. You know, probably some more room to grow. I don't know his history. Last week was the first time I ever saw him. So I don't know, like, you know, I'm not invested in him yet, but you know, from what I saw, it wasn't bad. It wasn't like great, but it was good. It was fine for what it was.
Eric, we can pull out the '80s references when we're on together. And I wanted Lance Russell from Memphis to show up and interview Action Andretti and go, "We got a young man here, made waves last week, and go into a whole, you know, or mini bio interview with Action Andretti. We didn't get that, but we did get a fireball, which is very, you know, 80s also. I mean, it's also 70s and 90s. But I thought the turning around and getting hit with a fireball wasn't timed great. It felt a little acted, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't great timing wise, but yeah, he's just, I mean, there wasn't a distinct personality, but he was likable and didn't seem scared, but he didn't like ooze charisma either. What'd you think, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's only been in the business for 3 years, so he has some developing to do. But, you know, fortunately, Jericho likes him. Jericho can help him work on his promos. I was looking down at my notebook when the fire thing happened, so I saw replays. I saw replays and or stills on Twitter. It looked like a stiff fireball. I mean, it looked like there wasn't a lot of room. There didn't seem to be, like, a lot of room there. The other thing I liked about the segment was that it was a follow-up to what happened in the opening segment on the show, you know, sort of confirming in the audience's mind, yeah, the thing you saw in the opening segment was important because, look, they're following
up.
And again, another WWE backstage type angle. The show overall, I thought, had more of a – and I don't know how much of that is just they brought in an ex-WWE guy to be the production guy. And it, just the last 2 weeks have seemed like more WWE-style angles, production, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I suggested that a few weeks ago, and Todd gave me a hard time for it, although I used an ex-WWE writer as an example, not somebody who produced. But I felt like AW could stand to have someone with – they would benefit from having someone with some experience – looking at how to present and format and execute a wrestling show and do some of those little things that I think WWE does that people don't necessarily appreciate or even notice, that if you add it to what AEW does well and what they do different than WWE can elevate a lot of the things that AEW does and help some of the things that AEW does well mean more. And I would say the last 2 weeks we've seen that. I mean, I don't think it's like, I don't know if confirmation bias would be the right term to use here, but, you know, oh, new guy came in from WWE, now the show seems more like WWE. But I think even if that news wasn't out there, I think we'd be going, this just feels a little different. It feels just the pacing and the going back to review things without having it seem like it's just, you know, filling time for just to fill time because there's not enough content, which I didn't get the feeling at all here. It just does feel a little bit more polished and produced in a good way where the things that matter are being underlined. And that's, I think, important. And I don't think it's Tony Khan's natural instinct. I don't think he needs it. And I don't think he needs it as a fan, so I don't think he delivers it to other fans. But I think a lot of viewers do need it. And when you look at, you know, I mean, one thing they can use help on is getting more fans in these buildings and lighting the buildings better. It is a different subject, but if we're going to praise the production, it'd be nice. AEW would, these shows would look better, not only if they had a hot crowd, which they had tonight, but a building that was more full and where it wasn't obvious with certain camera angles that this is an old building without a lot of people in it. Did that jump out to you, Eric?
They had about 5,000 people, a little bit north of that, which is better than they've been doing lately, I think. And I think it was set up for maybe 6,200, 6,300, according to WrestleTix. So
yeah.
I thought the crowds the last 2 weeks especially were super hot, and that really, really – that just there's no substitute for that, right? A hot crowd. I mean, it just makes everything feel more exciting and more important, like you're part of a happening. So
a building that did better this time than last time, which is a good thing. My point is there were still some empty seats, and they chose a camera angle that showed – darkness in the upper deck. And when you have, if you have a full building, you can light it, and that's ideal. Like you shine it. But if you don't have a full building, from a production standpoint, don't aim a camera at the part of the building that isn't full when so much of it is in that intimate venue.
Yeah, this is one of the last two Dynamites under the current set. I think Tony Khan was interviewed somewhere today and said that he would be introducing a new set on January 4th in Seattle. So interested to see what that looks like.
Something else we called for on the show about 2 months ago? on the time of their anniversary. Yeah.
Your checklist. So what they did not, however, they have not gone into the concourse and shot fans walking into the building or being in a long souvenir line yet. They've the Wade Keller checklist. They still got a little ways to go, I think.
Yep. Javier, your thoughts on that?
Well, first, December. I just got to mark the day, December 21st, the day that Eric has introduced the stiff fireball into the wrestling lexicon. So,
that's funny. Yep.
So, but yeah, I mean, the production when it comes to like the buildings and stuff, whether it looks full or not, that's never been something that I really. That's just not something that really sticks out to me. I do think that, you know, cutting to empty parts of the ring is kind of not the wisest course of action, but the arena, if they ring them in arena, is not the wisest course of action. But yeah, I mean, it's never really something that stood out to me in the lighting and stuff. I guess if you do have a big crowd, you want to have, like, that drone camera shot of showing everybody losing their mind when the show opens. Because that does – I guess that does add something to it, but – not having it doesn't take anything away from me personally, but I could see why people would feel that way.
What else, Javier?
Yeah, and the only other thing that really after that was the next match, trios match, which I thought it was fun, these guys getting together, but that ending, I was so like I was apoplectic when like in the middle of the beatdown. Instead of calling what was going on, Excalibur's already moving on to the next segment.
Yes.
To the point where, like, something happened during the beatdown. Like, there was still, like, one more spot to go. And then he had to stop his promoting what was coming up next to call it and then get back to the promoting and then cut away to it while you have this beatdown going on in the ring. I'm like, what? That was, you know, I don't, that was just, as good as the first segment was, I was, like, not feeling that.
It was, I don't know if he was, it almost seemed like he was, didn't want to do it, but someone was telling him, we got to go, like, you got to do this. And he was trying to stretch it out as much as he could, but then finally gave in. Or maybe Tony Khan was like, this is going on too long and, you know, we just need to move on. And maybe they just, the beatdown was dragging on. Did that jump out to you at all, Eric?
Yeah, I couldn't tell whether that's somebody in his earpiece telling him to do it, or if he's doing that of his own accord, that's just weird and bad instincts. But if it's somebody in his earpiece, like you think, you know, it's a possibility. I guess when the boss talks in your ear, whether that boss is Vince McMahon or Tony Khan, you kind of got to do what the boss who's running the checks wants you to do, even if it goes against your instincts.
Yes. Yeah. Javier,
yeah.
What else?
That could have been the explanation for what had happened, but don't book things in such a way where that might be a possibility. You know, if you know you're going to have this serious beatdown, should have cut to commercial and then come back, you know, and then say, oh, we're cleaning up. While we're cleaning up, here's the, here's what MJF had to say. That was just kind of the, you know, don't put yourself in that situation. So that's pretty much what I had. I did want to ask Eric with Wrestle Kingdom coming up. And looking at the pieces that are in play, do you think after Wrestle Kingdom, we may end up having I'm thinking we might end up having something Omega Kota Ibushi related, maybe working together or working against each other, and likely also Sasha Banks versus Kairi Sane. That kind of seems like two strong pieces to have for a big U.S. show. Maybe even like a Madison Square Garden with AEW, you know, and / ROH getting involved. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can tell you I watched AEW Dark last night because I wanted to see – I heard Kenny Omega had a match against Shino, if I'm saying his name correctly, from Japan. Big Japan, I think, is his most recent stops. And it went about 10 minutes, and the world did not fall apart because – Kenny went 10 minutes with an unknown on AEW Dark. And he, during the, but
was,
to your
I was,
point.
Why is Kenny Omega trending on Tuesday?
Yeah. Javier, to your point, during the match, Kenny Omega said, as he was beating him down, he said, you're not Ospreay, you're not Ibushi, to the guy he was facing. And so certainly, and on social media, they seem to be planting the seeds for an Omega Ibushi match. I mean, I don't think an Ibushi match is taking place in New Japan, given his acrimonious accusation-filled breakup with the company. You'd have to AEW would have to. There's money, obviously, in Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, and they've said they wanted to save their epic match for a big stadium and a big occasion, which everyone I think always kind of thought would be at the Tokyo Dome some year. But AEW started, and so you could bring that over here. But for it to be a feel that big in the U.S., it would probably have to be like a Forbidden Door thing, or AEW would have to do a heck of a lot better of a job than they did last June, telling the fans, establishing who Kota Ibushi is and why he's so special and well thought of, for that match to be to really reach its full potential. As for Mercedes and Kairi Sane, I wouldn't be surprised if that match is the February 18th New Japan from San Jose U.S. pay-per-view main event.
Okay.
Did you catch the make Kota Elite sign in the crowd tonight, Javier?
I'm sorry, you broke up there a little bit.
Do you see that? Do you see the Kota sign on Ibushi sign on in the crowd tonight?
No, I did not. I did not. But yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, because if things are over, I wouldn't be surprised if. Well, I mean, I don't know, considering the fact that Kota Ibushi pretty much said, you know, he doesn't believe in signing with companies. I don't know if he'll actually like full blown sign with AEW, but I could see him, working with AEW after things, finish with New Japan if he really, you know, set on that. But should be interesting to see where things go on from there.
Yeah, cool. What else have we here? Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. Have a Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas, Javier. Thank you. Appreciate it. By the way, Zach Haydorn will be hosting the SmackDown post show on Friday, and I encourage everybody to support the show. And if you watch SmackDown Live Friday night, call in and talk with Zach and his co-host going into the holiday week. We still will have that post show for you, although I will not be a part of it. Cool. All right. So we have more people who've called up. No one's pushed one yet. So if you want to actually the next caller, nobody else currently has flagged themselves as wanting to be on the show. So push one. Or you can call us 347-215-8558 and push one. I do want to go to an email from JB from Detroit, Eric. And he says, first off, I think we have to start off by giving Tyler Sage credit for his predictions last Wednesday. One, he predicted Jericho being a possible next feud for Starks to get him off the MJF program. Check. He predicted that Cavs coming up with a 3-1 deficit to the Warriors in 2016 was an inspiration for the Trail of the Best of 7 series, and Excalibur referenced it on commentary today. Okay, so now a few things. Now a few things I took away from tonight's Dynamite. One, I like what they're doing with these Book of Hobbs segments. I think the real-life story of Hobbs is rather inspirational. I assume this is being used to turn a baby face, but will AEW need to do anything else to address his clearly heel antics of the past to truly turn him face? Your thoughts on that, Eric? I like the segments. I do not think it's necessarily turning a baby face. I think some people have a rough background, and while they might be sympathetic, the way that they cope with it just isn't necessarily – it's heelish, not baby faces. And that's what I've been assuming they do, that direction they're going with him, but maybe not. What do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking you could in my notebook I've got, wow, you could certainly use this same set of facts to portray him as a super baby face if you wanted to, like he's overcome this and that and people stabbing him when he was a kid and whatever else from tonight, but you know in supervillain origin stories, the supervillain often has been mistreated in childhood and had a rough time growing up, and it caused lots of trauma, and it caused them to take up arms to defend themselves and do unto others before they get it done to themselves. And that seems to be what they're doing with Hobbs, and you know, using some version of his real life story to do that. So it's different and interesting. It's like Hobbs has been in the promotion for, you know, most of the 3 years of the company's history, and they're now sort of – it's only now that they're sort of taking a step back and letting him breathe and trying to grow him and as a personality. So better late than never, I guess. And I think we've had three or four of these, so I'm not – they're all sort of variations on the same theme. I wonder – I guess I wonder where this is going.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I mean, this feels – sometimes when somebody gets – rebooted or they start profiling who they are, it feels like this was a bland personality or an unformed personality and they're trying to paste something onto them to make them interesting. This feels like there was this person all along we didn't know and it's being revealed to us now, but it's authentic. And that's good. that's what you want. So far so good. And it's, I think it's the right pace too. You know, this is, you're right. There's been a few of these vignettes spread out over time. And I think that's better than trying to just, you know, jam a personality profile onto one show right before they have a big match. This feels like more of a long-term investment. Next up, JB says, where does FTR go from here? Will they have a rematch where they get the win back against the Guns for cheating? Does Tony Khan know that FTR is on the way out, so he's using them to get the Guns over? They seem to remain one of the more over acts with the company, yet they've already wrestled and lost to the Acclaimed and the Briscoes, so they seem very far from any on-air title scene. Yeah, Eric, what do you make of the booking of FTR? Is this, you know, people thought, oh, Austin Theory lost the Money in the Bank the way he did, and he's getting buried, and it was really a way to actually elevate him by having him react to the loss, the humiliating loss that could derail his career, as a wake-up call to get more serious and more intense, and they rebooted and reframed his character in that way, and it feels more main event now. I'm not saying that's what's happening with FTR, but it can't be ruled out that it's something along those lines, that they had this long streak, they were number one contenders, they finally got a title shot, they had a setback, and now something isn't right, and it's a storyline for them that is meant to build them up. But I'm also not ruling out, given their rocky history with the Bucks, who are EVPs, and Tony Khan, and, you know, disgruntled indications on social media and passive aggressiveness, that this could be trying to get some other teams over by beating them, quote, on their way out. What do you think?
Well, FTR, from their previous employer, WWE, are certainly no strangers to being on the losing end of the stick on television. My first thought was they're going to be wrestling at Wrestle Kingdom for New Japan, where they are still the tag team champs, on January 4th at the Tokyo Dome for New Japan's big show of the year. And they've now lost three in a row, two on TV, one on pay-per-view. So Tony Khan isn't exactly doing his New Japan allies and partners any favors by this losing streak angle. I mean, at the time this losing streak started on AEW TV, I think they held three sets of belts. Now that's down to two because they lost the Ring of Honor belts. I guess the loss to the Briscoes on the pay-per-view earlier this month was fine because it was the third match and FTR had won the first two, so it made sense that they should put the Briscoes over. The loss to Keith Lee and Swerve was, you know, I mean, it was a good match, and I think the loss was maybe a little bit fluky. And then tonight, the Guns just cheated to win. My question was, what are they going to do with the Guns? I mean, are the Guns stepping up in class, and are they going to go back to the Acclaimed versus the Guns, which we've already seen a couple times, in January? I don't know that does a lot for me. That's sort of been done.
Yeah.
I wondered if they cut time here because the match felt short. Wasn't, you know, FTR was jumping around and making the Guns look really good. I don't know. You also could be setting up challengers for FTR if they were to win the AEW belts. And Tony, I mean, I think they're decent merch sellers. I've seen some FTR shirts at shows, and I think they're over with the fans. I mean, they get a big pop every time they come out. So I don't know. I mean, I certainly would not discount that he's jabbing them out, but I mean, I think the bald one, Dax, I think he was somewhere where he was running his mouth, which is, you know, every week, but, oh, I think my contract expires in April. I'm pretty sure if I were contracted to WWE or AEW, I would know exactly to the date and the hour when my contract was up. So, I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I laid out the possibilities in my you know, preamble to questioning you on it. I think you can rate it both ways. It also could be a test for, you know, by Tony Khan to see if they'll, you know, cooperate and play nice and understand who's in charge. And then he might have a fork in the road that he can take either direction on, which is, there's a story we can tell that gets FTR, gives them, you know, more of an edge or an angle where they, who knows, you know, where they tell a story about these losses adding up, even if there's interference and it's not, you know, like getting squashed or anything like that. Cause it doesn't feel like they're being buried. It feels like they're on the bad end of in a variety of different ways coming up short in matches. So I think it's the beginning of a story, but the fact that it got acknowledged by the announcers means it's something that they want viewers thinking about. Sometimes things happen in terms of losing streaks, and if it doesn't get brought up by the announcers, then maybe the booker doesn't, or the promoter doesn't want it to be on people's minds. It's more happenstance. This doesn't feel happenstance, but I think it can go, you know, any number of directions. And I think we're just meant to not know at this point.
Yeah, I think another point that just popped into my head is Tony Khan has, you know, one of the observations, potentially criticism of AEW, is you always know who's going to win every match on Dynamite. And starting with that Ring of Honor pay-per-view, he mixed it up a little bit. I think, you know, there were some upsets on that show or results you didn't see coming. Maybe that's what tonight was, right? I assumed FTR was going to get their revenge on the Guns, mocking them for months, right, at ringside and running in and beating them up, especially after the Ring of Honor, at the end of the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. And that didn't happen. I guess I'd be the thing that I'm curious about is if the Guns are going to be next in line for a tag title shot, then sure, FDR doing a job to elevate them in the sort of cheap, cheating way they did makes sense. But if it's just a thing that doesn't really elevate the Guns in any way and there's no payoff for that, I'm not sure I would have FDR jobbing to them on television like that. Unless, you know, they're on their way out.
By the way, what is your opinion of the Guns as an act? Like, what would your advice or your reaction be to Tony if he said, what do you think about their upside and their talent and their push? Are they overpushed, underpushed, properly pushed, improperly pushed?
It would be tough for the Guns to ever win me over. Based on the sort of nepotism involved here, it's different when you're Dusty Rhodes and you have a son as talented as Dustin Rhodes, and then, you know, eventually Cody Rhodes, right? I'm not sure the Guns are that talented, and I just, they're better in the ring than they were, but they weren't very good at the start. And FTR did a lot to make them look good tonight. I don't know. I just. They're good heels, I guess, in that I really want to see them get their ass kicked on a weekly basis. And it's not quite go away heat, but you know, if Billy Gunn wasn't their father, would they be getting TV time in the nation's number two promotion? No, I think they'd be toiling away on indies somewhere in front of 200 people.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Back to JB. He says, and we talked about this early. Was it on air or off air? Before the show or early on the show? After Bow Wow and now Rick Ross, who is the next C-level celebrity AEW will get to appear on Dynamite? He sent a follow-up email. He goes, tonight we had Swerve aligned with Parker Boudreau, another guy to be managed by Rick Ross, and a cinder block was involved. Again, sometimes simplicity is best. What would you think of our Swerve Keith Lee summit tonight with Rick Ross, what they call him, the hip hop guru, emceeing the event and well, go ahead. I'll let you start.
Well, if you're, I know a lot of people are working on their year end best and worst and their year end match of the year lists and all of that. I'm going to keep butchering her name. Soraya. If you had Soraya penciled in number one with a bullet for her opening, her promo that she did that was completely long and meandering and one of the worst segments in Dynamite history, if you thought there was nothing that could get in the ballpark of it, I'd say the Swerve Keith Lee segment gave it a run for its money. Ultimately, it wasn't quite as bad. I guess part of the reason is I had high expectations for this, right? I thought after weeks and months of will they break up or won't they break up, they were finally going to like air the grievances. They were going to do Festivus in the ring. Here's what the problem I have with you, Keith Lee. Here's the problem I have with you, Swerve, right? And they were going to, you know, air their issues. But we didn't get that. The whole segment from top to bottom was just weird. It contained one of the funniest things to ever happen on AEW Dynamite when Rick Ross said the word.
Oh, God.
The MF-er word on live television. I'm sure Tony Khan has just got out his debit card and called the FCC and says, how much of a fine am I paying here for this? Let me get it over with. I will not appeal. Just let me have it.
And by the way, how disrespectful of Ross to do that on TBS? I mean, he's got to know.
I don't know. He's a rap guy, like, right? I'm going to guess his artistic work is filled with that word and other words.
Right, but
like
you don't go into someone's gift shop and act like you do at the nightclub or, you know, whatever. I mean, like, there's a context and you got to be, you know, an adult and understand the context you're in and adapt to the, you know, at least some semblance of courtesy and rules.
Yeah, my notes say right from the jump, my question I asked was, will this go too long? Yes, is the answer. But that if it went too long, it was good. You could at least live with it. But I thought Rick Ross was supposed to be like an honest broker of the thing. And like Tony Schiavone was still in the ring for a while, I think maybe to help if things went off the rails, but he certainly did not assert himself if that was the case. Rick Ross seemed to side with Swerve and sort of was almost like his hype man, like, you know, his amen corner, just everything Swerve was saying, Rick Ross was seconding the motion. And then, you know, if Swerve tried to make it a little bit, and Swerve didn't have his entrance music when he came out, which things felt off, right from the get-go there, right? It was like, well, why doesn't Swerve have his entrance music? And Swerve was a little uneven, not as good as he usually is. And then we get – but all of that was fine. All of that, you could have lived with it, and you'd been like, oh, they had an off night or they underperformed. But then it was – then Swerve does his transition sentence of you're going to have eyes in the back of your head, and then too long of a time elapses, and then all of a sudden Parker Boudreau comes out, and – Parker Boudreau, cut from NXT, not picking up wrestling apparently fast enough, if you believe WWE sources. And I watched AEW Dark last night, and Parker won a squash. And I can tell you, last night and tonight, Parker Boudreau knows how to look at the hard cam and grunt and growl after every move he does. I don't know that he knows much else, but he knows how to do that. And then there was another guy who the announcers didn't know who he was. I didn't know who he was. I don't think I've seen on Twitter who the guy was, the guy with all the
yeah,
tattoos.
Yeah, I
like,
know.
For a little while, I'm like, is that Brian Cage? I'm like, no, too
oh,
many
God,
tattoos.
No.
Right, yeah. I'm like, it reminded me there were like a late era, like when WCW was struggling in the early 90s and then when the bottom fell out in the late 90s, they reminded me of like a tag team you would see show up in WCW, like the Masked Blasters or...
I was thinking that it felt low end. I mean, potentially low end. I mean, it's the first glimpse, but when it's in a segment as lousy as that segment, and by the way, everyone involved like just seemed like unaware of how bad it was. Am I wrong on that? Like there seemed to be this sort of in certain cases like smug self satisfaction with how good this was when it was just grinding the show to a halt. I mean, my initial reaction in my report at PWTorch.com covering the show was, it felt like a half-speed dress rehearsal walkthrough when they were just trying to figure out what they were going to do but hadn't edited it down or gotten the pace down yet.
Yeah, I hope that cinder block was pre-cut because cinder blocks are heavy and they hurt. And, Keith Lee...
I don't want to test this, but I think the physics is that the cinder block absorbs most of the impact when it breaks. That what you wouldn't want is for it not to break, because then there's that transference, that pool ball transference, bang bang, where it all goes into your body. But I think if it gets disintegrated, all the impact goes there. So I don't want to test this, but I don't think it was as dangerous as it looked.
Are you telling me in your martial arts days you did not break a cinder block? Aren't you a black belt, I believe, in your the study?
I broke boards. I don't think I did a cinder block, now that I think about it. I'm trying to think if we did cinder blocks in our, like, black belt tests and stuff. But anyway, I think I just broke boards.
Yeah, and Keith Lee was doing an admirable job of fighting off these two goofs by himself. Like, I thought, is Keith Lee going to, like, actually dispose of these two guys and get it swerve Strickland up on the ramp there? Because, you know, he got hit with a Parker Boudreau chair shot to his back, and there was a couple-second delay before Keith Lee's like, well, I'm not going to bump because I really don't bump that much. I'm going to – I guess I'll fall to my knees to sell this. The gulf between expectations and reality on this one as it played out was not good. And I was really looking forward to this feud.
This could have been better, yeah.
Swerve going to have these two Jamokes as his heaters? I hope not. Yeah. I send Parker Boudreau back to the Trust Busters where he can learn on dark elevation or maybe off camera might be the way to go there.
Swerve took a shot at Keith Lee, who, what was it? He can't even take care of his health. It was a interesting dig to put on the show. I mean, I know, you know, Starks is going at Jericho hard. But that, I wonder if that, you know, hit too close to home or hurts, you know, if Keith Lee would think, no, that hurts my brand to point out. So it's like, you know, when people, you know, you weren't allowed to call Hulk Hogan bald or Dusty Rhodes fat. You know, Keith Lee's got, you know, he's had some cardio issues and he just hasn't been, you know, who he once was in the ring. And it's not just age. It was, you know, the rap on him is he wasn't taking being a professional athlete as seriously as people wanted who saw great potential in him. I thought it was interesting that was put on television.
I mean, didn't he have a bad case of COVID and some after effects for months? I would think given all of the problems in AEW this year, Eddie Kingston, Sammy Guevara called him fat, I guess, in a Rampage promo that didn't make air, and then Eddie's in his face, and, you know, just all of the drama, you know, the biggest one, Hangman Page, going into business for himself against CM Punk, and CM Punk issuing multiple receipts, including the All Out press conference. After all of the nonsense that's gone on in AEW because people get butthurt over what's said in promos, I would sure hope that they're clearing this stuff with each other ahead of time, right? You know, just having enough respect for your fellow performer and just avoiding problems. I wouldn't think Keith Lee would like that, but, you know, man, yeah, that would be kind of a deep cut if Swerve and I don't think – did Keith Lee say anything tonight? Did he even get to talk?
I don't think on mic. Now that I think about it, yeah. I'm trying to think. Like, did he even say anything sort of off mic? I mean, he just had to fend off attackers. Yeah. I mean, it was so not good. And it's not easy to do this. Like, you know, having a cohesive, well-paced angle isn't easy, but boy, did they make it look a lot harder than I think it actually is too. This was not good. And I, you know, this type of thing where if they watch it back, they should be like, we got to be more on our game. Like, we got to bring it. That was just, you know, if you're Tony Khan, you're like, I can't trust these guys. And I don't think you just blame, you know, Rick Ross for being kind of awkward and talking over people. And I know the mic, but it sounded like the mic was a little off. But in, you know, Swerve just kind of standing there, just admiring what was happening from afar, but it not really adding to it once the attack started happening. And the whole thing just feels like a weird, weird fit in terms of the people involved in this faction, or what was the term they used?
Affiliates.
Affiliates. Yeah. A mogul affiliates. So, I mean, this is going to take some effort to make it work and fix this mess. This just was like a carton of eggs being dropped on the floor at the grocery store in terms of what I thought of the segment when it was done.
Right, but there's got to be a segment producer, right? I mean, do they not do a dry run? Because, you know, Rick Ross is not in a wrestling ring 52 weeks a year on live on TV. I mean, you should be able to iron out some of these kinks or see what the problems are as you're, you know, you're doing a table read or you're doing a, you're running it ahead of time. I just, I come from a journalism background, and when I see a story that's just completely off, that misses the mark, many people blame the reporter. I blame the editor, because the editor's supposed to be the one who knows better, right? Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be the adult and the gatekeeper who makes sure bad things doesn't happen. And I would think the producer would be that in this case. So,
I think there's a lot of blame to go around, honestly. But this wasn't good. Anyway, JB, I have one other comment here, and then we'll move on to our next caller. I feel one common crutch for TK is that whenever a tag team or faction breaks up, he feels the need to align the heel of the faction with another heel faction, and the first breakup angle is always aggressively overbooked. And that's kind of, you know, that's in relation to what we're talking about here with Swerve and Lee. I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what they're going for here. And you know, I do think there's diminishing returns with factions, especially when the factions don't feel natural and it feels forced and it feels like these people can't survive on their own. So we're going to try to camouflage their greenness or their lack of well-roundedness by putting them in a faction to kind of cover for it. And, you know, maybe those people just shouldn't be on your show. I mean, there's just so many, wrestlers in AEW who kind of come and go and disappear. And is this, I don't know. I mean, I want to give it a chance. You know, I will give it a chance to kind of correct course and get more cohesive. But it's off to a rocky start, and it did feel needlessly overbooked, especially because Keith Lee can talk and Swerve can talk. Let them talk.
Yeah, which is what I was hoping for out of this angle, and I didn't really get.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder, so if this one was so bad to not be salvageable, I don't know if you could – you're not so invested in it that you couldn't just immediately drop those two goons from the act, right? I mean, I'm sure if you ask Swerve Strickland, who has a chance to be a top-tier heel in AEW, he is really, really talented, he can work, and he's good on the mic, and he's got a natural kind of cocky heel charisma about him. I'm sure if you asked him in an interview, do you want to be carrying Parker Boudreaux's green ass around the ring for the next 6 months or a year or whatever, I'm guessing the answer would be no.
Yeah. This is not, I think, what people imagined for Keith Lee in terms of how AEW would utilize him. And I'm not even saying it's wrong or blaming anyone or anything. I'm just saying, bottom line, being in a feud like this with these people in a segment like that, it's not helping Keith Lee stock. It's not showing WWE they made a mistake the way that they booked him or treated him. It was amateur hour, and it felt like an hour. All right, let's go back to calls. If you want to call, it's a short line tonight. 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558, and push 1 on your keypad to join the conversation. And you can also email us WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, Sam from Nebraska is up next. Sam, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you again. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was like, it was weird because there's parts of the show I really enjoyed, and then the segment you just talked about I thought was a bit of a disaster. And, not even a bit. It was a full-on disaster. There's some things I really liked. I really enjoyed the main event. And there were some things I thought were, like, encouraging, and then things to be worried about, because it's just like, you know, I like that they just had Ricky Starks just out front and center right away, because AEW's really bad about having guys just disappear right after they do something. Of course, then the back edge to that is that it tends to happen where then Jericho gets involved, and it seems to just suck the life force of anyone caring about that person then, to a degree, because Jericho just gets involved with that kind of stuff. So I guess just kind of, I thought it was okay. I'll be honest, I appreciated how they kind of didn't just phone it in this week. I felt they actually kind of tried, which is nice. The last few weeks, I've by and large enjoyed the shows pretty well. I've been kind of down on the show for a bit. Yeah, I guess anything. I just called in, so I'm not quite sure what all you've talked about.
No, that's okay. What about the show have you liked recently, and why did your interest or enthusiasm for the product drop? What what are they doing a little bit better now, and what had they been doing worse or that discouraged you?
Oh, I mean, it just felt like they had lost a lot of momentum. And I admit, I've never been the world's biggest believer in MJF. Just never got kind of like some of the he does a lot of like kind of shock jock cheap heat stuff that just doesn't work for me. And
yeah, I think that is the worst part of the approach he takes, because he doesn't need to. Some people need to. He doesn't. Is the shock jock stuff going a little too far? Yeah.
Yeah, no, because there's times I think he's wonderful, and I admit, like, his return and everything, particularly with all the Wardlow stuff, just like, because I thought the Wardlow feud was done really well, and then how that just kind of fizzled and everything just, like, didn't work for me. And I just felt like the show was really rudderless, particularly after everything that happened with CM Punk. It was just kind of, it was a show that it was having a really turbulent time. And I just felt there wasn't a whole lot of consistency. It was both out of their hands, but also, you know, this is also not just, you know, it's also a, you know, scripted show. So you should be able to, you can try to create your own narratives and stuff in terms of like taking control of this stuff. And I just feel like there's just been a little more consistency, and to kind of use a term you've been using more, there would be, at least for me personally, there's been a few of the lesser irritants lately that AEW has had. I mean, yes, there's always going to be some stuff that I'm just not a big fan of, but that's kind of any show. I feel like they've been just kind of rounding that out. Like I appreciate tonight Bryan Danielson being in there, being serious, being where he needs to more be, in my opinion. Because, I mean, he's a guy who I would have at the very top, just because I've always been a big fan of his. And I like seeing, like, this presentation of him. This is great. This is where he should be. Doesn't need to be screwing around with whoever. So,
Sam, we haven't talked about that yet. So, hold on for a second if you can, because I want to throw to Eric on that, because I'm with you on that. I'm nodding along on Bryan Danielson tonight. The tone was good. It felt serious. You know, I wish he didn't just take the mic away from Renee. I like when there's a sidebar issue, but when there's a star interviewer, like, you know, a real somebody who is good at what they do, I just wish they didn't just take the mic from them. But that little criticism aside, I thought he explained why he was more, you know, sympathetic and invested in William Regal than his partners in Blackpool Combat Club, Cesaro and Moxley. And I thought that was good to cover that base and revisit it. It's giving a lot of attention still to Regal, and it's still missing one thing I'd like, which is Danielson. I know how much he admires and respects and loves Regal and how much he means to him in real life. But in the wrestling story being told, Regal made some boneheaded decisions and screwed over Moxley, who's his cohort, for the world title. That should be the most important thing going on this show. Or at least, you know, it should be always treated as you know, there's certain injury angles or personal things that maybe you could say are more important in a short-term sense. But to screw Moxley out of a title for some whatever, you know, lame explanation Regal gave, and then that weird angle they did, you know, afterwards with that hidden promo, or the promo that might have never seen the light of day, I still think Danielson's just got to go, hey, I love him, but he screwed up, you know, and kind of address that. Maybe they don't want to draw attention to the booking. But the tone, as Sam brought up, was right, and the follow-up was right, and I thought it was good in terms of laying the groundwork for Ethan Page, who I think is really solid on the mic. This is what Ethan Page can be used for. This is a really good use of All Ego Ethan Page. And I thought he was really strong here too, going after you know, Vegetable Man Danielson, but then saying, oh, it's not because you're, you know, that you've been a vegan, it's that I'm going to turn you into a vegetable. So I mean, I thought the segment ultimately worked, but I had, you know, little issues, mostly due to what wasn't there that I'm still waiting for with Danielson in terms of saying, I love you, Regal, but, you know, you screwed this up. So, Eric, just your thoughts on that segment. What went through your head watching it?
And I worked on that this was a second very Raw-like segment, you know, just like the show opener. I thought Danielson was a little meandering, a little bit repetitive, but the crowd was going with it, right? The crowd was into it. Renee asked him, started the interview by asking him if, you know, what's going on with the Blackpool Combat Club. And he didn't really answer that question, right? I get that they still got to keep up this Regal thing a little bit because Danielson's motivation for going after MJF is that MJF put down, attacked his Regal, who ended up in the hospital in storyline, right? So that's his motivation. So they got to bring it up, you know. Asterisk: Regal still has not given and won't be giving a really good reason why he turned on Moxley. I mean, that still yeah. sort of sticks in my craw a little bit. And every time they bring up Regal's name, I remember that, and then that makes me irritated for the days when I feel like AEW was less focused. That, you know, Sam brought up in the previous months that it felt a little unfocused. In Tony Khan's defense, his mother was going through some pretty serious health problems, I think he said recently. So I get why Tony might have not been completely focused. He was worried about his mom and where she'd live. The vegetable man thing, I thought he was doing the vegan thing, and I thought it was cheap heat, and I thought Wade would be very upset that a vegan was being made fun of on national television.
Not when it's a heel making fun of him.
All right, and then, but then, I don't think it's acceptable in polite society to call somebody a vegetable anymore, right? I mean, that feels like a term out of the 80s and like a truly tasteless jokes book. That you'd have gotten at Walden Books at the mall. I'm like, can you say? I'm like, I wrote down in my notes. Can you say that on national TV, or is that, you know, that's probably offensive to people who, you know, got who have been watching their relative in the hospital who got in a car accident and who are, you know, in a coma or whatever. So, very.
I'd call that pretty low grade. Offensiveness. I mean, I get what you're saying. I think it's still in bounds in the context that it was presented. Like, I think if the term is used flippantly by somebody who you're supposed to admire, maybe that, you know, maybe some people have grown, but I think when a heel is doing it, it's a heel has to be able to be, you know, quote, un-PC at times. And I think this is in the realm of what's acceptable in a wrestling context.
Yeah, it was minor. I agree. You know, ultimately what this was about was, Danielson wants MJF. They have, if this is the pay-per-view match, man, they started building this too early because this pay-per-view is 10 more Dynamites away. So that's 2.5 months. And the segment made sense overall in that you want MJF. No, you're going to get the gatekeeper heel, right? Ethan Page before. And then you had MJF looking at a screen backstage, you know, smirking as in a heelish way to kind of tie it all together, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, it was, I thought it was a little bit uneven in parts due to some of their past sins, but ultimately the crowd helped them, you know, helped it get over maybe more than it deserved to.
Yeah. Sam, back to you.
I guess, I don't know. I didn't have a whole lot else. I guess I was, I'm kind of surprised that they seem to be having a little more of a packed show next week. Some stuff that I'm looking forward to with Danielson, with Wardlow Joe, and then with, of course, with another one of the trios matches, which I admit, as much as I like those guys, it's just I'm really not caring anymore. You know, they always have great stuff, but it, you know, it's just too much of it now. So other than that, have a good holiday season, everyone, and thanks for everything you do.
Great. Thanks, Sam. Good to hear from you. Appreciate it. Happy holidays. All right. Along the lines, I want to go to Joe from New York with an email here. His subject line is AEW needs star power. Hey, guys, I was watching this show, and the truth is AEW needs CM Punk. AEW, like WWE, has a lack of star power at the top. Punk is a main event player. Like it or not, he sells tickets. Tony Khan has to show he has the chops for this business. And what I mean is he needs to show he can make top guys work together, no matter if they like each other or not. I have been a wrestling fan for 31 years, and I'm 43 years old. I've never seen such a lack of star power. Just not enough top guys. Today, fans think you can just put a guy in the main event program for 3 weeks and he's a main eventer. No. It doesn't work that way. Not if you want to make real money and draw real ratings. Punk should be told to heal up and get ready to return to work. There's no way I'd buy Punk. I'd buy out Punk, give him 80% or 90% of his money to do nothing and leave the door open for a chance he returns to WWE. No way. That is not smart business. Punk needs to return to AEW. If anything, the Young Bucks can go because they're not draws. The diehard AEW ROH fans love them, but that second million you always talk about, Wade couldn't care less about them. There's a simple reason for it. The Young Bucks don't sell. They just do flips and dives, and they get up 3 seconds after taking a finisher. Longtime fans know you must sell if you want matches and storylines to work. The Young Bucks have never been told to adjust their style. Just because people don't like what Punk says doesn't mean a lot of it is not true. It's just today that the young generation is soft. This is like JBL on a rant. In my opinion, Kenny, Cody, and the Young Bucks were given EVP titles as an excuse to pay them more money and give benefits to them that Tony Khan did not want to give to the other wrestlers. AEW needs Punk. So, Eric, in light of what Sam said about his ebb and flow of confidence in the AEW product and enthusiasm for it, and what Joe is saying here, how do you assess these last few months without Punk and the state of AEW overall, and honing specifically on Joe's email here, is there a lack of top guy star power that's hurting the show?
Well, as somebody who was in the room when Punk had his meltdown at the All Out press conference, and my jaw still remains on the floor about that 3 months later, it was just a shocking moment, right? And you couldn't tell. It's wrestling, and you're like, you know, there's this the sort of sometimes real, sometimes kayfabe nature of these post press conferences. Was Punk? I thought at first that Punk might have been setting up an angle between himself and the Elite, or, you know, even though they had just set up an angle with Punk and MJF, right? And that turned out not to be the case with the benefit of hindsight, mostly because I don't think we knew Punk was injured at the time or the extent
right.
of the injury.
Yeah.
And so
I don't think he did either. Well, maybe he had an idea, but.
Yeah. So, but after that happened, I know you did some tricky reporting, right? Since somebody wanted to talk about it. So it was tough to unearth some nuggets on there. And I remember you saying early on, I think you were the first to say he's done, right?
Yeah.
I would be shocked if he's ever in an AEW ring again. And I don't know if this is just my personality is, why would you leave all that money on the table? Let him heal up in 9 months and come back and just make money off Punk Omega and Punk and FTR versus yeah. Omega and the Bucks. And I don't want to say AEW lacks star power because they have lots of good performers and lots of stars, and they've even got some people who could be stars, Kenny Omega, if they would focus a little bit more, you know, on being a top guy. And I think AEW is doing a better job now of trying to advance some wrestlers, Ricky Starks being the most notable, into that top tier. And MJF obviously is back, and he's the man carrying the promotion. Numbers don't lie. And AEW's high point, as you've noted, was fall of 2021. They had Adam Cole come in. They had Bryan Danielson come in. They had the exciting New York tennis stadium show. They were drawing more than a million viewers a week, I think, for probably a lot of September and October. And the promotion felt super hot. And Punk did not ultimately close the gap between AEW Dynamite and WWE Raw in the ratings. Right, there were some weeks when they do better in certain demos and whatnot, and maybe even a week or two in the key 18 to 49 demo. But they did, you know, they still did hit a ceiling. Punk was a difference maker. Punk was a draw, and not having him on TV, you know, setting aside his backstage shenanigans. Not having him on TV, I think for sure has hurt their ratings, and I think that's why they're not drawing a million viewers or more in the overall number every week anymore, right? It is a lack of star power, and maybe it's been a lack of focus in the booking that's been as the promotion's been beset by one injury and one drama after another this year. So if I still feel like you can get there, right? It's just it's like you're in a car race and you're winning. You're almost lapping the field, and you got to stop in the pit because you know your top performer cuts a promo that live at a press conference that completely disrespects his boss and gets him essentially fired. You know, parting of the ways, and then you've got a lot of ground to make up. Right, you're in the pit stop for way longer than you thought you were going to be, and now you got to try and rebuild. You got to get there. So. I see some of Joe from New York's the emailer's points. I am not as down on the Elite as he is. I think they'd be even worse straights if they didn't have the Elite back. There is a question though. Look, going forward, Tony Khan, you know, built excitement in his promotion, and one of his big booking go-tos is the surprise signing of a big star, right, or a medium star that he portrays as a big star in some cases, and. Where are they going to get that in 2023, right? Triple H is now in WWE and popular generally among wrestlers and supportive. And I'm not sure where that next great big star comes from, developing MJF. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously MJF is the guy that they're leaning on right now, getting Bryan Danielson back. In a more serious role is important. I think Ricky Starks and capitalizing on that is good. I think strengthening the women's division, even if there's been some, missteps and bumps in the road since Saraya came back and, you know, not really being as I think laser focused on getting Toni Storm over as they should be. They've got some good things going. And I thought that main event segment showed off who their top women are right now. But I think right what you want to see in AEW right now is a motivation from the vast majority in the locker room who are glad Punk is gone, who had a strong opinion about him either way. Some people just weren't around him much. And, you know, they just, you know, they're like, whatever, you know, I'm just here trying to get Tony's attention and get myself over and maybe make some money. But among, you know, kind of the locker room leaders and veterans, it was pretty overwhelmingly anti-Punk. Well, those people should be stepping up and being motivated. I really liked Moxley's promo tonight. I really like Danielson's promo. I thought Jericho did a really good job. I mean, I'm not sad that people kind of are kind of picking at Jericho a little bit for being whatever, an opportunist or, you know, glomming on to whoever is hot. But I don't actually hold that against him as long as you brought up there. The water level is raising all boats. Is that the word I'm looking for? Yeah. And so, I mean, when you got Jericho, Moxley, Danielson, Starks, Danielson, Moxley, Jericho, Starks. We had Hangman out there with Dark Order briefly. I mean, I still think there's enough star power on the roster right now, where if they just put on a good show and they make sure that what those wrestlers do feels important, that's fine. I mean, like part of the problem was they had too many stars and they weren't getting enough TV time. Now you kind of got to look around and go, all right, this is my team. I got to make the best of them and get the most out of them instead of this sort of rotation where nobody, to use an NBA analogy, nobody's getting enough minutes, or to use a wide receiver analogy, no one's getting enough passes thrown their way. Now, I think the top 4, 5, 6, 7 people in AEW is plenty for them to build on, and that motivation should be there to show we don't need Punk. And MJF is, you know, the top guy right now, but I think he still has a lot to prove that he can be effective as the top guy. But I mean, I liked MJF's promo tonight too. That backstage fired up adrenaline rushing promo is one of my favorite settings for a wrestler. So I liked the show. I thought there was a lot of good stuff on the show. I don't think it was a blockbuster show, but I just think when you look at the individual segments, I thought that the star power was solid. But again, it really depends on who you see as a star, and not everybody's going to look at MJF and go, yeah, he's a centerpiece heel on a major national company, because he hasn't proven himself to them yet. And MJF should, you know, show up every week, not trying to shock jock his way into proving he's a top guy, but just understand if he keeps doing what he's doing and he's got the right opponents, and the production is there and the booking is there, you know, and he can contribute behind the scenes as young as he is, compared to some of his other main eventers, he should be helping steer things in the way that he thinks will help him. Everybody who was happy to see Punk leave, and or at least appalled at the circumstances of his of his last public appearances, they should be showing up motivated every week. And I think there's enough talent and star power to do that right now.
I mean, I think where CM Punk's apparent departure hurts the most, AEW the most, is they got to negotiate a new TV deal, presumably with Warner Brothers Discovery. They failed to get an ROH TV deal, which is not a good sign. Warner Brothers Discovery keeps cutting everywhere they can because they had, to borrow a lot of money to make this merger happen. And getting an increase, this can be something that gets discussed and reported out in 2023, but I think they need to at least double what they're getting to sort of make them a little more competitive when a whole bunch of free agent contracts come up, to have enough money to afford the budget of signing some, not only keeping their own talent, when you push new stars that, and if they do well, they tend to want pay increases, right? Or they're going to jump ship, and to keep into, re-sign the Bucks and Kenny Omega and folks like that. And so 2023, if you were drawing a million viewers and you had, not only are they under a million viewers, but in the key demo, they're not in the mid to high 30s anymore, right? They're more low 30s, I think, for the most part. And so you had a lot of the numbers in a recent Torch cover story that was very good. And you should read that if you haven't. Not having Punk there to help them improve the ratings and keep the ratings high, because he certainly has a fan base. And Warner Brothers Discovery being very cost conscious, what happens if they get 1.5 times, they get $66 million instead of $44 million a year? Does Tony Khan can reach into his family's pocketbook and presumably make up the difference, but I don't know that that's what you want to do when you're running a wrestling company, right? Because there tends to be a shelf life with that. What you want is to get $100 million a year or more from Warner Brothers Discovery, your valuable property, and can you do that based on their current ratings and their current their current trajectory, and instead of drawing 175,000 pay-per-view buys or 200,000 for that all out 2021, you're going to be back down to around 140, which is better than what you were doing when you started, but not as good as when you had Punk in the company. These are all questions in what could be one of the big stories to watch in 2023, AEW's financial success and new contract or lack thereof.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Talking about Moxley here. This is Briar from Council Grove, Kansas. He goes, I had a question on John Moxley. It seems as though he's been spinning his wheels a little bit lately by running over his opponents like tonight with Darius Martin and then competing in the $300,000 or $3,000 Battle Royal, as Tony Schiavone said, the $300,000 Battle Royal on Rampage for Friday. Do you think AEW should keep Moxley as a special attraction and not have him wrestle every week or once or just once in a while in a meaning and just once in a while in a meaningful storyline? Hope you have a Merry Christmas. Yeah, what do you think of Moxley wrestling Darius tonight and what that even means?
I mean, I don't think Moxley's been spinning his wheels so much as they're building this Hangman Page match, and I can't tell if Hangman Page isn't cleared for contact. I just assumed it was they've been brawling all over the arena like for weeks now, right? And if he's not cleared for contact, in real life, should he be brawling with John Moxley? Probably not. Or are they just trying to delay this because this is going to be a hot feud and a big feud for them and a pay-per-view match? Again, it's 10 weeks away. I don't think you can wait 10 weeks to do MJF and Danielson, and I don't think you can wait 10 weeks to do Moxley and Hangman Page. It'll feel stale by then. I didn't think Moxley and Darius Martin, it underperformed, I thought. I don't know if it was styles clashed. Clash. My only notes for the match was, well, it certainly padded out 10 minutes of the show. They didn't have a ton of heat, which you would think Moxley in the ring should have a fair level of heat with a crowd that was otherwise good for most of the night. I don't know. Moxley, you needed to move Moxley away from MJF to create something new there, and they did. And he's feuding with Hangman. So he was used for a few weeks to try and prop up Rampage, right? Cause when Rampage's ratings fell below 400,000, barely above 350,000 in tonight, they used him. He can't be a special attraction to answer the emailer's question, because Tony Khan needs him out there drawing ratings every week, right? He's a note, you know, the Joe from New York, the previous emailer, talked about how AEW lacks star power. Moxley is one of the brightest stars they've got.
Yeah, yeah. I go back and forth on you know, how to utilize Moxley and how frequently to use him and when there's diminishing returns, and if it cheapens him to be out there, or if he's just setting a good example as a workhorse. And it's you know, I mean, I think he wants to be out there. I think he wants to be putting in the reps. I think he wants to be giving a rub to, you know, people like Darius, and having a sort of a short-term storyline that might manifest on Friday in the Battle Royal. But I get, you know, what Briar's saying. I mean, sometimes, you know, I mean, if Roman Reigns was doing that every week on WWE TV, people would look at him differently. I just think Moxley's personality is he wants to go out there and just be physical and be kicking ass. And you can't do that with pay-per-view matches. And AEW, thankfully, contrasts WWE, and WWE's better about this under Paul Levesque, but, you know, there's the incessant rematches, other than the best of seven series. But at least that has a context and a point to it. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's pros and cons, and I don't think there's a right answer. And I don't think it's obviously wrong that he's wrestling this often, but I'm not shocked that Briar has that opinion also, that it can take something away from him. I mean, having Moxley be the Rampage savior, I don't know. It seems like that's a difficult assignment. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Joseph says, hi, guys. I was wondering how you would feel if AEW made all of the six-man straps into a best-of-seven series moving forward. In the past, it seems like it's been hard to build a storyline around trios in the same way singles and tag teams are built. So would be using the best of seven series, utilize a more sports-oriented approach, which could be unique to this division. Thanks, and have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Thanks, Joseph. Eric, I mean, not every team challenging for this trios title is going to be a star, a big enough attraction where you want to feature seven of their matches or even four of their matches in a row. That'd be the downside. But I part of me just likes the idea in a general sense of belts being differentiated from each other based on how they're defended and the context in which they're defended, kind of like the Pure title is different than the ROH World title. But no, I mean, you can't have best of seven series all the time. The trios titles, there's not a major six-man or three-man teams to make a best of seven series work unless you start having them off TV or on Dark. That's my initial take. How about yours, Eric?
Hoo boy. I think the list of teams I would like in AEW that I would like to see do a best of seven six-man, pretty much it's only the Elite and Death Triangle. That's the list. And fortunately for me, I could watch these guys wrestle every week, and I'm getting to see them wrestle every week, and I have not run out of patience. I think it's all great. I you know, selling is overrated, as we all know, Wade, and you certainly don't get a ton of selling in mm-hmm. in these six-man matches, you know, within the match itself and week to week. I mean, just if you play this out to your point, let's say Death Triangle retains, which I don't think is going to happen in LA on January 11th, but it could. Mm-hmm. Then you go Death Triangle versus the Dark Order. And we've got a clean sweep here for the Death Triangle, 4-0, right? I don't know that that's super compelling television. I mean, the only other team that you might consider slotting in there is the spooky Malakai Black faction and the House of Black. And, you know, I don't know that I want to see them wrestle on TV six or seven weeks in a row against Death Triangle or even the Elite, right? It's there's a reason that best of seven series have been few and far between, and that's why you remember them, right? You remember Magnum TA and Nikita Koloff, which I don't think all seven of those aired on television. I think who did Booker T wrestle in a best of seven series?
Chris Benoit.
Yeah. I mean, you and you know, there probably have been others over the years, but you know, it's I'm sure Tony Khan, who previously for the most of the history of the company has been rematch averse or quick rematch averse.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably trying his patience to do this 7 weeks, nine weeks on TV.
What do you think of the match tonight?
I mean, I liked it. It was a chaotic match.
Yeah.
If you're into selling, again, like I said, you probably your results may vary. My one critique was, I'm not sure about Kenny kicking out of a hammer shot, right? He got hit with the hammer, and it would have been fine if one of the Young Bucks had made the save, right? But the thing that put him down in the opening match, that, you know, surprise upset, gets hit on the head while in the one where he's got Phoenix and the One Wing Angel, and Phoenix clocks him, and he's all of a sudden down. That's believable, getting hit in the head and hit, taking the 1-2-3 totally makes sense. I'm not sure kicking out of a hammer spot makes sense, though. The plunder, at least, was retrieved during the ad break when they were doing the split screen thing, so that was okay. I'm guessing you probably weren't as high on the match as I was. The crowd also helped a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite kind of match, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was, you know, exciting. There wasn't a dull moment. You know, Kenny was kind of selling his jaw for a while, so I mean, at least he remembered he got hit with a hammer. I thought it was good. I mean, I didn't mind the match, but again, I'm watching it through the lens of if the Bucks and Kenny slowed down and told more of a patient story and made everything they're doing count, what would that look like against Death Triangle? And would it be better? I don't know. You know, if they just slowed down and sold a little more here and told the story in between moves a little more, what would that do in the context of this rivalry? Or is this rivalry built on, you know, the frenetic pace? And I don't know. But no, I mean, I wasn't like angry at the match. I enjoyed it, but I get the criticism, and I agree with some of the criticism that I'm just intrigued by what if they slowed down for some of the match and told a little bit more of a story and had a little more cohesion to things. The only other thing we haven't mentioned from the show of any significance was just Hook getting a squash match tonight, a win over Exodus Prime. It gave them a chance to just follow up and talk about the Jungle Boy Hook alliance that was formed and then do an angle afterwards. Hook wasn't in a big hurry to go help Jungle Boy, but I guess he was just dumped in a trash bin. So, you know, it's not like any more damage is going to be done. What'd you think?
To me, the most interesting part, has Hook been on Dynamite a ton? I feel like once, maybe twice. Not a ton. So he was more of a Rampage guy, so that was interesting. My only note I have on that one is that the backstage attack that they showed on the video screen was the third WWE-like segment. And I know that AEW has done that kind of segment before because it's tried and true in modern televised wrestling. And it's usually the Jericho Appreciation Society attacking somebody backstage, right? And so this furthered that. With Stokely Hathaway's group, and it's interesting that AEW historically has tended to sort of repeat finishes and repeat angles on the same show. I know that's been a criticism by some, and so now we've got two situations where up-and-coming wrestlers are helping other up-and-coming wrestlers. We had the Action Andretti Ricky Starks alliance that was formed, and now we've got the Jungle Boy Hook alliance that's formed. So it's kind of the same storyline a little bit. But, you know, space them out on the show. I guess I'm in favor of seeing both of those. I'm excited to see how those two storylines play out.
Yeah. Anything else, Eric, from the show tonight?
No, I think we have... We have covered it all.
Yeah. Well, why don't we wrap up?
Oh,
there,
wait.
Oh,
there was
no,
one
we got
more.
Something. Yeah.
One more we didn't talk about. The Acclaimed broke their streak. I don't believe they were on the show tonight. However, we had Sanjay Dutt doing a rap on this.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And I really, that's a minute of my life I will never get back. at least I will say the silver lining is they're just burning this off on a rampage on December 23rd at 9 Central, 10 Eastern.
There,
so there ain't going to be anybody watching this because everybody's going to be wrapping presents and baking cookies and probably buying, you know, buying presents maybe even at the mall. And that is all I have in my notebook.
Cool. All right. Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays. We will continue to podcast here as the live shows continue to take place over the next week or two. We thank you for joining us. Thanks to our callers and emailers. And always good talking to AEW with you, Eric.
Thank you, Wade. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you and to all of the PW Torch family.
Excellent.